Hey, everybody. Remember, we talked about it? We're doing it. Bubbles and brisket.
Join us Saturday, June 26th in Cary at V Pizza, because now we get to be in public together.
There's going to be a bunch of pitmasters and chefs preparing all different types of brisket for you. There'll be at least 18 different sparkling wines and champagne for you to try. It is going to be one heck of a party.
With help from our friends at Raleigh Magazine, Triangle Wine Company, and Butcher's Market, we finally get to get out in public and enjoy ourselves. And why not? Let's get outside, a little bubbly, and put it with what we all genuinely love, delicious brisket.
To get tickets, you go to ncfbpodcast.com. That's our website if you didn't know. Bubbles and Brisket is going to happen on June 26th from 2 to 6 at
V Pizza in Cary, North Carolina. Sponsored in part by Raleigh Magazine, The Butcher's Market, Triangle Wine Company, and brought to you by the NCFB Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Joe Van Gogh Coffee, featuring their Mountains to Sea blend. Inspired by summer adventure, Mountains to Sea combines coffees that awaken the adventurer within any coffee explorer. This blend, with notes of candied apple, milk chocolate, and lemonade, will only be available through August, so be sure to grab a bag today and head out on the trail this summer while enjoying the beauty and diversity of North Carolina's landscape and culture. Proceeds from each bag sold will be donated to the Friends of the Mountain to Sea Trail. For more information, click our show notes or visit joevangogh.com.
You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh. The NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today we go out to the left coast with a graduate, so to speak, of North Carolina's, one of their top restaurants, one of their top restaurants. But she's left us now. But we relocated and found her in California working for Goop Kitchen, Ms. Chef Kim Floresca.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Not much. We are so excited to have you on the show. And this is an odd format for both Matt and I. We, even during pandemic times, Matt and I tended to get in the same room and record shows together. So we were almost always coming from a studio. This show, however, is 100% being done on Zoom because I am currently in a hotel in San Jose, California, my hometown. Matt, you are in the creature comforts of your home in Holly Springs. And Kim, you are in sunny Southern California in Santa Monica, no doubt. Is that right?
That's right. And actually, it's not very sunny here. Unfortunately, it's a little cloudy.
Yeah, that is. Welcome to what no one realizes about Santa Monica and in June. June gloom was like specifically made for Santa Monica and that area because it's always fogged in. If you go a little further east, like once you get on the other side of the 405, it's bright and sunny and everything's fine. But you get that marine layer inside of Santa Monica down all the way, even when the marina and Playa del Rey where I lived, and it looks nasty. It feels like you're in like Seattle the whole time until like midday.
Yeah, it feels like it's like right now it's what, 10 o'clock in the morning here?
Yeah.
But it feels like it's like still 7 a.m. So it's all good.
Yeah. We're going to get into Goop Kitchen. We're going to get into Goop. We're going to talk about those fun things that you're doing right now. But let's kind of pull it back a little bit and let's talk a little bit more. Because we're a North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast, we like to talk to those that are from, or maybe even in this case, an alum. Going back to, and I should have this written down, but I think going back to 2014, was it, or 2015, you were working at One in Chapel Hill, and Greg Cox, our famed writer, recently retired writer, gave you guys the Restaurant of the Year award at that time. Do I have my dates right?
You probably have the dates better than I do. I think I know when I was born and what year it is. So that's probably the extent of my annual calendar. He was amazing. And can I just say, like, I miss North Carolina. I miss the people, the mm-hmm. culture, the family. I mean, it just seemed such a tight-knit community that everybody was so welcoming. I miss y'all.
I miss North Carolina too. I've been gone for like 9 days and I can't wait to get back.
And yes, you can say that. We're happy to hear you say that. Kim, I think that's a good jumping off point, because people in North Carolina, or our listeners, probably do know you from one, but your resume is star-studded, to say the least. I mean, you've worked at Per Se, The French Laundry, Il Bulli, and the list goes on and on. And how did you end up in North Carolina? What brought you there?
We wanted, you know, much like Max had said, he wanted a kind of a different life, and we knew that the Triangle was up and coming. It had a great culinary scene. You see it popping up all over the place with Rose's Meats and Sweets and places like the Umstead and Farrington House, all those really great names, Ashley Christensen. All of those names started popping up, and we went to go visit it. And just fell in love with the area and the possibilities of the culture that it's creating in new style cuisine, but also, you know, the ping to the homage of classics of the South with a new twist. Like, I love that. I love that so much.
Well, and wasn't one, because the one was at least funded by, was it a doctor or a couple of doctors or so, I want to say. And I thought the allure was that, the idea was that they were going to make one with your help and Daniel's help, and we'll get into Daniel as well in a moment, such as the aforementioned, like Per Se and Il Bulli and French Laundry or so. The idea was to like do that in the Triangle, right? And that's kind of how you were brought into the fold, was to try to like make like a top-notch world-class restaurant.
That's right. And it was kind of something where we wanted to test the waters as well. That was our first position as actual chefs owners. And we wanted to see, you know, give the waters a little test and see what we could come up with. I think we enjoyed our time there, but at the end, it just exhausted us. And we, you know, kind of left. And, you know, it was at a point in our life where Daniel and I just wanted to take a step back. And after 3 years being there, which isn't very long in the restaurant industry, we needed to reevaluate. Was fine dining the way we wanted to go? You know, is there something else in life that we really wanted to do? And we wanted to take that time, and we did a little bit of traveling.
When you were spending your 3 years in North Carolina, and by the way, I know that you've been all over the world. You're somewhat of a military brat, if that's still an acceptable term. I'm not sure what else is. What was kind of some of the things that you do miss specifically about North Carolina? And contrary, what's some of the things that you don't miss? Like, oh, I appreciate this about not being in North Carolina.
I will say I don't miss the humidity. Yeah. It does wonders for my hair, which is terribly like Polynesian hair that just pops out, which is the reason why it's always in a bun. But also I thoroughly enjoyed seeing things from a new perspective. I had never tasted pawpaws before. I'd never even heard of it. And going to all these places in Spain and New York, you know, you always think that you're like at the upper echelon of creativity, what's new. But then you come to some place and you're like, oh my God, how humbling is it to find something so remarkably beautiful of pawpaws and learn about the history and then learn of what like is so great about something so simple like that. Learning about the different seasons. I love that. I love how you can almost get you can get persimmons and oranges and, you know, all of these things while there's watermelon and beautiful corn still growing. For me, it's a very, for many of the cultures or many of the cities that I've been in, it's been very seasonal. And there's a pretty big divide of when you start to see, you know, summer vegetables or fruit starts to build into the fall. And so being in North Carolina and seeing that, you know, going to the Raleigh Farmers Market or even Carrboro, it was magical. And I take that with me everywhere I go. And there's great farmers markets here in Santa Monica. But, you know, you meet the farmers and you get to know them, you get to hear the history of them, you start to build these relationships. And to this day, I still talk to quite a few of them. Actually, I ran into Tracy. Why am I drawing a blank on
Desjardins?
This? Yes.
Tracy Desjardins, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking a lot about farmers markets and the relationships for that. And it was just, I don't know. I do miss that. I miss the culture, miss the family, and I miss the food for sure.
Well, you've been famously quoted as saying that you thought North Carolina actually had 8 seasons. Was that just kind of more like the preliminary of every major season and like how it evolves? Or what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so we take a lot of documentation, Daniel and I personally, just to kind of figure out what the seasons are like for different climates. And for me, learning what California growing seasons are, right? It's just continual. Even from North California to like SoCal is dramatically different. But going to North Carolina and seeing the humidity really affect the fruits or the vegetables or what the seasons are like we love documenting all of that just for personal to know what you're going to do for many to come. So I say 8, there's probably way more than that. And there's probably microclimates and micro seasons in between all of that. I say 8 as a generalization of the expectations of moving, being able to take this shift of, you know, the previous season into the next. And it's kind of these like micro seasons to be able to grow your vegetables and fruits for us to be able to use it for our menus.
Yeah. So you've mentioned, and we both mentioned Daniel a couple times. So let's, for our listeners that don't know who Daniel is, Daniel Ryan, he's your partner both in the workplace and in the home, typically, right?
That's right.
You were saying just right before we got on the show that not exactly in the same structure at this very moment, because work has taken you into two different directions at the current moment. But Daniel, unlike most chef stories, this is like a two-person story when it comes into the professional side. And I find that to be unique in this area. You don't see too many chef teams. I mean, you'll have a sous chef and a chef or however, but you two are not only together as a couple, but you've worked in kitchens both at one, but even at other places throughout your career. I would love to know, like, for one, just how the hell did you even make that work? And and two, like, are you both skilled in different avenues of the culinary scene? And like one has kind of got more of a lane over here and the other has a lane over here. And how does that work?
Yeah. So, we've been together 19 years coming up next month.
Wow.
And I think we've been able to work through a lot of the quirks. We traveled everywhere and we would always work at the best restaurants, whatever the two best ones were in the city. And at night we would come together and we would just kind of like compare notes. So it was essentially like you were working two restaurants, but getting the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. When we moved to one, that was the first time that we were both kind of, I mean, at Meadowood, we were both very much, you know, involved in the day-to-day operations as managers, as chefs and sous chefs and whatnot. And Daniel was the pastry sous chef at the French Laundry. But we've been able to work through our relationship because it's very much a partnership, right? And if you're not willing to give and take a little, you're going to be finding yourself more upset, more angry. And that's not the way we wanted to portray ourselves. That's not the way we wanted to work with people or people around us needed to see any of that. So we kind of developed this 60-40 relationship. You give 60, the other person gives 60, you're putting in 40% of your effort towards, you know, other energetic things that doesn't pertain to necessarily the relationship. So if you put in 60% of your efforts into the relationship and the other person puts in 60%, it's never 50-50, right? You're never shortchanging somebody else. So if you think about it that way, which to us probably makes sense and probably isn't like most relationships around there, but for us, it was work is work and home is home. But there's a fine line to find out where, you know, you have to keep your emotions in check. There's been a few times, I'm sure, where we've kind of had our spouts, but it's for the good of the company and it's for the good of the people that are around you in the restaurant. And what's the main goal? And we know what the main goal is at the end of the day. And, you know, I'm sure I'm a pain in the ass to deal
no,
with.
No, don't speak.
I'm allowed to say that.
Oh,
I'm
my
sorry.
God. Please don't ever curse on the show. I'm just kidding.
I'm probably a pain in the ass to deal with, and I'm sure he has many other things to say about me too, but I enjoy it because he is definitely smarter than I am, data-driven, very methodical, and I'm more creative. Let's just see how it comes out. Let's just do it and let's see how it comes out. So his weaknesses are my strengths and his, you know, and vice versa. So it really worked out to our benefit. At least we were lucky.
Okay, there's so much to unpack here because this is basically a masterclass in how to work with your partner or your spouse. And by the way, we just sent that little snippet of you saying that he's smarter than you, and he's going to like play that on a ringtone over and over and over
again. Yeah.
He's smarter than me, but I'm a better chef than he is. We'll just say
Perfect. Lay down.
Throw it.
Now enter Chef Daniel Ryan. No,
yeah. And look who's on the show now. No.
So 60-40, I need a little bit more information on that. So you're saying that like 60% of your mind, your efforts, all you can give is into your partnership. And then like the 40% is for yourself still. Is that like kind of maintaining your relationship and your own self-care?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, we're very supportive in whatever the other person needs and very intuitive of each other's feelings. And we know that you need some time away. You need some time. Well, I mean, this is a little bit more time than I probably expected away. We've been apart for about 7 months, but I'll go up, you know, that's another story. But yeah, 60% into the relationship, you give it all you got, you pay attention that 60%, and you keep working at it. No one's gonna be perfect. And if you put 100% on your plate, you're just gonna keep having those expectations that you'll never be able to meet. Nor will you ever expect your other partner to be able to meet. You'll hold them at such a high standard. So maybe we're dropping our standards and saying 60-40, but I think that is something that has been obtainable for us. And I think that's something that has worked really, really well for us. And you know, it's to each their own, right? I mean, whatever works for you and you can make happen, do it. Be happy. Life's too short to be angry and mad and frustrated all the time.
I mean, Max and I are both taking notes right now for like relationship advice. So
you both have 60-40 now, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I'm gonna use that. I'm gonna be like, yeah. Listen, honey, I can only give you 60%. That is a lot. Okay.
I thought you were talking about our relationship. I'm putting 60 into this podcast.
That's what I was talking about.
You need to put.
That's 60. What I said. Well, who else would I say, listen, honey?
To? Yeah. Exactly. I can only imagine there was like moments in the kitchen though, just like any band where they're like two brothers or a couple or whatever, where they're like the employees see a little spat starting to happen between the two. And then they just back up. They're like, oh no, mom and dad are fighting. Like
exactly.
Just back off. But, no, that's cool. Going back real quick and to continue into like the time that you had in North Carolina, I saw another quote that you were talking about. It was a great article that was written with both of you back in the day. And you were saying something about to keep the team motivated and inspired, we would take the one culinary team on field trips and do a lot of food trivia. We learn something. We take trips to our purveyors, and you specifically cited Border Springs and their lamb farm, Craig Rogers. I wondered, were you a part of the first lamb stock, like the unofficial lamb stock when all the chefs came out there?
No, he invited me a few times, but for some reason it always fell on like a really weird time. No, we actually took the team over there to go and see what it was like. We're serving his ingredients, you know, all the lamb hearts, the like lamb leg racks, all of his bits. We were serving in a restaurant and I'm like, guys, this is so beautiful. We need to go see him. So we would take field trips. We would go for barbecue. We would go to, you know, pawpaw farms. We would do lots of different things, but it was more important for us to create the family that you're working with, right? You can't choose the family that you're born with, but you can create the family atmosphere that you want with the people that you work with.
Oh, yeah.
And that for us was the biggest part of it. So we would do food trivia nights, right? So we would have like prizes that we'd have for a gift card or whatever it was. And whoever got, you know, I can't even remember any of them right now. We would come up with like this really great question. And whoever got it, like shockingly, would go into detail about it. And we learned from them too. So that was... you have to keep people motivated. We feel motivated by the people that we surround ourselves with, but you also have to engage people. You can't just expect them just to do your prep day in and day out. What's the point, right?
Yeah.
Food is such an emotional experience. If you're cooking angry, you're gonna put out shitty food. If you're cooking and you're happy and you're loving everything, food's just better for some reason.
That's a nice mentality. I think that's really cool to have that feeling. I mean, contrary to all of the all the kitchens that we all know from years past where the French chef is screaming and yelling, or just the cocky New York chef is yelling and screaming at guys, you know, whomever. And yeah, it's nice to feel like, no, you know, the best food that was cooked was when grandma or mom was making in the kitchen and it was quiet and there was music playing and everyone was having a good time. It's like, yeah, keep that mentality in a professional setting. It can only lead to great product at the end. It's kind of a cool way of thinking.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder though how, I mean, your background and the illustrious places you worked for, because I worked at Per Se for a very hot minute. I mean, it was not the lovey-dovey. It was more of the brigade style and the very harsh words, if needed, at times. So was that something that you observed and were like, okay, this is not how we're going to do it?
Yes. So, I mean, look, all of the places that I've ever worked, they taught me something so amazing, and I've taken every bit of that with me. And at some point, you ask yourself, who do you admire the most, and how do you become, you know, in the same lane as they are? And what do you love so much about them? And I was working with Christopher Costow, and he was just so creative in the way that he was thinking that.
This is at Meadowood, right?
This was at Meadowood in which Napa. Is now unfortunately burned down.
Burned down, yeah.
And he was just so cerebral and creative and thoughtful about the food. And he always cared about his people. He would always pull them aside and ask them, you know, what's going on in your life? How can I help you make it better? And I pulled from that. You know, it really resonated with me. And why not continue to do that for people? Why not just choose to be kind as opposed to being, you know, a jerk and throwing things? I mean, I've had so many things thrown at me, you know, now it's a very toxic place and you can't do that at all. But at levels where it's the 3 Michelin star and they're trying to achieve it, like, I understand that. I understand, but there's a balance, right? I worked with Ferran Adrià, who was like, I couldn't understand a single word he said. And even though I spoke minimal Spanish, I always had to find out from a translated translation of what he said. And he was just like, you know, food is just bigger than what you think it is. It's bigger than a recipe. It's like more involved than anything. And so you pull parts of it, you know, right? You pull parts of the different places that you've worked with and you say, okay, now I want to be a chef. What kind of chef will I be? And will I be a memorable one to the people that matter? And will they go on to the next place to be something greater? And, you know, you want to be a mentor to the people that you really admire, and you want to be a mentor to the people that, you know, whether they're a dishwasher, whether they're, you know, your som, whether they're your, you know, next door neighbor, be a better person. And it's harder to be evil and mean. So that was something that we really try to apply every day. Granted, did I make it every day? I'd say that relationship was maybe 60-40, but I'm sure I had my moments. But, you know, it's development, and it's finding out what kind of person you want to be, both personally and as a professional chef.
I love that mentality. You were such a seasoned veteran, even in your young age of doing all this, and even giving credit to Christopher Costow, he's not an old person either. Like, I'd say he's probably only in his mid 40s or so. And to have that awareness back when you were working with him, that we're going back about 10 years, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's pretty awesome that somebody had that levity at that age. And that was before a lot of change happened in this environment of the food and beverage industry. So completely on the forefront of thinking that mentality. And I happen to know, and, you know, funny, like, we should actually mention this, is that the reason you're even on this podcast, I mean, sure, you're a pretty good chef. I guess that's one reason. but specifically why you're on this exact time at this time is because we were talking to Carrie Schleifer just a few months ago. And she's, of course, at LA26 in Crook's Corner. And she worked at G2B, which was also owned by some of the original investors that did one as well. It's almost like sister restaurants in a way. And
that's right.
And so you two held the similar positions at each place. And so we were like, your name came up and it's like, oh yeah. And it's like, there's just such great feelings and the vibe from any chef that you could speak to about the environment of one and Chef Floresca in the area, in the town. You were always somebody that I think gave off that really positive vibe. So it's really cool that you've been on the forefront of the culinary scene, but also like the environmental scene of how you should be running restaurants from the beginning, from way on. So I think that's in a way kind of a transition right here is to talk about what you're doing right now, because I feel like this is the next step of culinary advancement. And so,
Max, before we get into the next step of culinary advancement, you mentioned somebody previously talking about how Kim and you and we know each other, and that's Carrie Schleifer, who, Kim, guess what? I don't know, this is, might be a good reason to come back and visit North Carolina, but we're doing an event called Bubbles and Brisket, and Carrie Schleifer is doing one of the briskets. She's doing one of the most different attempts at brisket because she's doing an old school Jewish style brisket, but we're having six different pitmasters / chefs, 18 different champagne and sparkling wines with live music from George Hodge and Tom Anderson. And we're doing it on June 26th from 2 to 6 outside of V Pizza in Cary. And it's going to be epic. It's going to be delicious. And we're excited to get back out and to do events. So get your tickets if you haven't yet, because at this point we're like a week away. It's Bubbles and Brisket. And go to ncfbpodcast.com/events.
Yeah, and we're actually recording this 2 weeks before, and we're almost sold out. So, like, we don't even know where we're at by the time this comes out. So get your tickets immediately. Bubbles and Brisket. I mean, who doesn't want delicious, slow-cooked brisket and champagne? Like, come on. Yeah, you're raising your hand, Kim. That's good. That's not good for pod, by the way. Hand raising doesn't help. I'm just kidding. But but so let's take a little transition into the future. Let's talk about what you're doing. I did notice on your timeline there was like a gap of years where you're not – it said that you worked for a private chef. I don't know if you're at liberty to talk about who that person was or what, if you care to mention any of that. But you did leave North Carolina to go back to California, and you worked privately. I've known some baller chefs that have had that – statement on their resume, and I've always heard crazy stories about the like. Care to comment on anything you did during that time?
I can neither confirm nor deny any of the statements. I unfortunately am under contract to never talk about it, but can I just say I really love Carrie, by the way. Carrie is my girl, and she was the first one to welcome us to North Carolina, and I love her so much. But sorry. Yeah, private chefing was kind of it had its great moments and it had its, you know, very unique moments, I'll say.
Yeah.
And that's all I think I can say about that, unfortunately.
Yeah. This is not
gotta be crazy though. I in a very general question, because when you're preparing a dish for in a restaurant and you're putting in a new dish on the menu or whatever, you have a pretty big audience to kind of try out and get some feedback. But when you're private chefing, it's like, oh, if your client doesn't like it, that's it. That's the jury right there.
That's right. And I was actually cooking for a family with kids, and I don't have any kids myself, so that was a very unique learning experience for me. I'll just say it was at times harder and more difficult to cook privately than as a professional in a restaurant where your controlled environment is and everything's nice and neat. Yeah, it was a very
yeah.
I think everybody should try it at some point.
So, okay. But so then you did move on from being a private chef to work with someone that I'd say most of the world knows at this point, Miss Gwyneth Paltrow.
That's right.
She holds a special part in my heart. Many people don't realize.
I think a lot of people's hearts.
Yes.
Well, and a lot of people's noses now, new candle of hers.
Oh, Matt, keep it clean, Matt. Keep it clean.
This smells like my kitchen, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, that's right. but so Gwyneth created her own brand, her own company, lifestyle brand called Goop. And Gwyneth has done everything. And why not create a brand? And now she's dipping her toe into the culinary side, but she did it very smartly by having you be the person to run this idea. So you're working with Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop Kitchen in Santa Monica. And
that's right.
Inside of The Colony, is that what it's called? Which is right. a ghost kitchen, which I want to get into it after in a moment. But explain what's going on. What is Goop Kitchen?
So Goop Kitchen is an offset brand of Goop itself. So we're its own separate entity affiliated with Goop. And we have created with Gwyneth a form of outlet for the culinary aspects of what she already has. So she's had a great run of 3 cookbooks. She's had TV shows. She's had, you know, a couple of famous chefs have been on her shows, and she's been a part of a lot of different avenues culinary. And she's a great traveler, and she loves restaurants. So she started Goop actually to tell people in a, I believe it was a blog, and I can't remember, in the early 2000s. Where she would tell people what her favorite restaurants were, and they started to develop, okay, here's my favorite shirt, and then here's my favorite shoes. And it just became like this small newsletter amongst her friends, and it very quickly grew into what it is today. And I'm actually at the Goop headquarters right now. And back in October, just this past year, I was asked if I wanted to be a part of this brand. And I was like, you know, I obviously knew of Goop. Most women do. I'll just go ahead and say that. Most women do. Sure. And I wanted a healthier lifestyle. People in North Carolina probably didn't want to hear this, but Dan and I went completely vegan for 3.5 years. And I'm still living the plant-based lifestyle, but I say I'm living it because I'm still working with, you know, grilling chicken and things like that at work. And we started to kind of go down this road of what could Goop Kitchen be. So we're a very healthy delivery only brand. And we plan to have a lot of different locations. Hopefully one will be in North Carolina, but we're gonna have maybe 5 by the end of next year in the local LA area. We'll go up north, Northern California as well. But we basically are a clean brand of food. So we don't use any canola oils. We don't use refined sugars and gluten. Our entire kitchen is gluten-free. We don't use any red meat. I'm sorry, from North Carolina. I know that everybody's talking about pork, and you're talking about brisket over
brisket.
There.
But just make one exception. Just do a brisket bowl. Come on.
Maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
But it is a healthier lifestyle of eating, and we wanted to bridge that gap of what healthy food is, right? Everybody thinks it's boring. Everybody thinks it's like bland, but it's fun. It's exciting. And it's actually taught me a lot of really interesting things regarding pickles. Like, we use maple as our sweetener, or raw organic honey. You know, we're using kale. I know it's a health foody kind of thing, but we're braising it in such a way that it makes it a little bit more hearty and a little bit more intense.
Yeah.
We're using local brown rice grown from farmers, and, you know, like, the list goes on. But the point is, like, healthy, delicious, delivered food can be just as exciting as, you know, the next thing. And so that's the brand that we wanted to take on the road. And eventually we'll have rotisserie and gluten-free pizzas and some other things. Actually, Anthony Guerra, do you guys know him, of Pizza Box?
Of course.
Yeah, he's one
of
our friends. Pizza Box.
Yeah.
He does some bubbles sometimes.
Yeah. And he according to my wife, she'll give him the endorsement, makes the best gluten-free pizza in the Triangle.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he kind of is somebody that I've been tapping into and saying, hey, let's talk about gluten-free pizza. He actually came out here, and then, you know, the pandemic and all that fun stuff happened. And it's like, okay, well, let's just backtrack it. But I think for us to get the word out and saying that, you know, everybody calls her GP, can help us create this lifestyle brand for people to also enjoy. We're creating vinaigrettes and dressings and sauces and all of that fun stuff, but in a clean, healthier version of, you know, your classic teriyaki, where you're not using 90% sugar. We're using gluten-free sourced tawari. We're using, you know, raw organic honey, things that will make you more sustainable in life, you know, have more energy, create a better experience, and then hopefully, you know, we'll take the show a little bit farther on the road.
Well, it's, you're kind of in that same category. It's funny, my wife and I were just talking about what Daniel Hume is doing at 11 Madison Park. He was just recently on How Is This Made or so, and he's going to reopen the restaurant completely plant-based. I think we are definitely dawning into a new age, and that's, you, like we said before, you're always on the forefront of what people are doing in the culinary industry, and it seems like that's going more plant-based with a little bit of meat. Like you did it sparingly, and I know from experience, because I was in Santa Monica last week. We went for a funeral. Wasn't the greatest reason. That's why I'm in California in general. But upon our visit, I text you and was like, hey, I'm in Santa Monica right now. Are you around? You're like, yeah, come on by. What do you guys want to eat? And I'm like, I guess whatever. You're like, what do you have allergies for? It's like, nothing. What do you like? Everything. Okay, give me 20 minutes. And then you just put together the most thoughtful, curated bag of food. I guess that doesn't sound right when I say it, like bag of food, but
it is a bag of food.
It's a bag of food. Yeah. Uh-oh, I think we just lost Matt.
He got tired.
Yeah, he's like, I'm out of here.
Is this the part where we get to talk shit on him?
This is definitely the part where you talk shit about. He knows nothing about food or wine. I just keep him on for the comedy aspect. Let's see. I'm sure he's going to jump in on somehow. But anyhow, you graciously let us, in some way, like kind of examine the entire menu, which was really great. And we went through, we brought it back to our extended family's home, and we laid out all the plates, and whew, like that was a mission. We got through it all to eat it all. And it was so fantastic. And it was nice because it was shared amongst maybe 8 people. So everybody really got to enjoy it. And they're like, oh my God, what's going on? No joke. We actually had a brisket on the grill when I got there. So
put it a little bit on your salad.
I put a little brisket on the side, you know, couldn't get too far away from that red meat, but I absolutely loved it. My wife, Felicia, she's always said, she's like, I could just eat this type of food for the rest of my life. Like if I was a vegan for the rest of my life, I would be, I could be, I will be. There he is. There's Matt. But she, like, your food touched her soul and was like some of the best stuff that we've seen in a long time. It was a true expression of like California cuisine to me as well. Like just taking, as you said, all those notes of like local sources and putting it all together. The packaging was beyond compare as well. And that's something that, like, I think everybody in this new world post-pandemic and all getting out of it is like, packaging for takeout food needs to be really great. And you guys did it where you've got inserts where the sauces are in their own little ramekins and they're tucked inside of the lid, but nothing gets put away. I even said to you, I'm like, oh, we're driving up to like the Calabasas, Westlake area, Thousand Oaks area. Is this going to be okay? Like, everything was packaged to be held to go for a very long time. So go for it. And you were right. I got home. I mean, even the salmon that was cooked perfectly was like warm and delicious. We got it out there. Matt, we lost you for a little bit, but I was just recounting my delicious food that Kim gave to us.
We were also talking shit on you. That's okay.
Oh, no, right? Shh, don't tell him.
Oh, don't tell him that. Okay.
But I'll hear that later. So don't worry about
it. Yeah, yeah.
Just edit that part out.
Yeah. But anyhow, I mean, that was, it was magical. Knowing Sarah Weiss so well, Matt, she would be in hog heaven, minus the hog, at Goop. Because yeah, it's not a vegan restaurant. It is everything. But yeah, but the intention, you do kind of almost make the meat kind of like just an additional additive to the dish, where it's like it's showcasing the plants and the vegetables and the sauces like so well. I mean, I was like, yeah, this is, I could eat this all the time. Felicia was like, that's all I ever want to eat now, just Goop Kitchen. So now you have this amazing brand, but you're inside the aforementioned Colony, which is a ghost kitchen. I believe there are 19 kitchens. Is that, how many kitchens are in?
I can't remember the last count because we've taken over a few of the kitchens themselves. So we're one kitchen. I believe there's about 19. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably around that.
And this is in West LA. Like, I used to work at West LA Music, which is no longer there, but that's on the block right next door to you. And the block you have is massive, and it's pretty much the building like takes up the majority of the city block there. It's a big building and there are no windows. You don't know what's going on. It's like a Tesla building. You're like, what are they building in there? But they're just making food, I assume, inside of the colony. But it all leads to just one little corner entrance, and you kind of open the door and there's a couple of touch screens where you can order, and there's a couple of stalls where you can just sit and wait. And there's just a guy, I talked to him for a little while. I think he was one of the managers of the colony, and like how he runs it. And he's like, yeah, we basically just run the ordering system. We have some beverages to sell here, some beers, some local beers, but we just package things up from all the different kitchens and we bring them to you, the customer, and everything's done on online or whatever. You can order in person, but most people have done it on their phone and they come through. It really is kind of the wave of the future as well. Care to tell us why you and Goop Kitchen decided to join up with the Ghost Kitchen in this model?
Yeah, so we only wanted to be a third-party delivery. So we're using DoorDash, Postmates, Uber, Uber Eats, and Grubhub. And we wanted to, I mean, obviously we opened in the middle of the pandemic as well, but we wanted it to be delivery service only. We wanted to be in a place that was at a good location. So we're right off the 405. And we wanted it to be in Santa Monica. That was going to be our first location, right? Mm-hmm. So with micro kitchens, the way it works is each kitchen stall basically has their own entire menu that they do. So there's maybe 15 different brands or 19 different brands in the actual Colony Kitchen right now. And each one is different. So you can have anything from fried chicken to Goop Kitchen to vegan food, vegan barbecue, vegan Thai, anything like that. And you can order it, like you said, you can go into the main building and you can have a family of four come in and the kids want chicken nuggets and mom and dad want Goop Kitchen. Well, you can order it from one place. And then each kitchen will separately bring their own food, package it up, and then bring it to the front. And then there it's distributed. But in the back, where I believe you entered as well, in the back big parking lot, is where all of our delivery drivers come. Yeah. So there's a separate entrance there. And we wanted to see and test the waters to see what Goop Kitchen, you know, how would it be received to people, especially during the pandemic. It was great for delivery options. And there was a lot of growth. I mean, it's almost harder to open that than a restaurant that we all knew and understood, where now you have to shrink everything and now you have to scale in a manner of, we're making all of our dressings and vinaigrettes fresh. We're doing high volume there. And are we able to support our next, you know, concepts of pizza and rotisserie and all that stuff, which we're actually working on now. And you know, we're growing, we're learning. And I don't ever want to be in a place where I feel stale almost, you know, like you're done learning. You're just in it for, you know, a paycheck or whatever it is on the daily. And you want to make sure that you're keeping fresh and sharp. So this was something that I think for all of us was a great learning curve, and something I believe you guys are all going to be doing shortly. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're doing, so the concept I'm going to open called Craftin, which we've mentioned on the podcast now a couple times, is similar, but in a way it's also extremely different. It's like on the opposite end, because what we're counting on is the guest interaction. And so we're turning it into like a restaurant environment where we have servers and bartenders and you can come in and lounge and hang out. And we just so happen to have multiple kitchens in the back. And so like the first one has four kitchens, the second one will have six kitchens, and they're all different from each other. And you know, we curated the people that were joining us based on their food, and so that it feels like, in a way, one massive, delicious menu with a lot of options, so that the kids can be happy, the vegans can be happy, the meat eaters can be, the fat boys and the skinny girls can all be happy.
Well, why can't they be fat girls and skinny boys?
I love that even more.
It absolutely.
I mean, that's the pH in fat, right?
Yeah. I was really curious just study-wise to see how it was working over there. It's really cool to see, like I had mentioned to you when we saw each other in Santa Monica, like Goop is elevated. Let's just say that it's an elevated concept, and it's like very kind of high-end type of food. Not like unapproachable financially. It's just, it's got an idea that like it's a little slicker than most places. But then right next door, you have like a Tennessee kind of hot chicken style place, which is just very, you know, kind of fast foody in a way. And they all existed under the same roof, which I really like, because when it talks to like feeding all y'all type of mentality, it's actually, I'm wearing a Lawrence barbecue shirt, and I think that's what it says.
I see that.
It says like yeah. Feeding all y'all. And so I like the idea that like where you're cooking and what we're trying to do at Crafting too is like, it doesn't matter if the food's cheap or if it's expensive or whatever. It's just an environment you can come here and enjoy, and everybody can kind of enjoy themselves for that reason.
So, I'm excited to come try your guys' food.
Yeah, we might have to save you a kitchen for the next group that wants to come out to North Carolina, and we'll put it in one of those cabins. Yeah.
Question back to the group as it exists now. So a couple things. One, so that is the plan, though, to open multiple locations in anywhere in the country.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. And assuming that you will be heading that up, is that the plan as well?
Yeah. So behind every great brand is a great team, and the people that I've surrounded myself with and we've employed have been truly remarkable. I mean, we've got a lot of great chefs, and you know, we don't hire cooks, we hire chefs, because you are your own chef of your station. And we, you know, we make mistakes too. And this is something new for me to learn about as well, about scales, scaling up and scaling up in bigger batches. I think for me is a great learning tool that I've used. And we have a great alumni from the Cheesecake Factory, a couple of them, who have great success. And, you know, look, Cheesecake is a great family restaurant. They did an amazing job. They're very successful. They're a great brand. Everybody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying we're trying to compete with that, but we have a lot of great talent that we were able to pull from there.
Oh, yeah.
Not directly, but indirectly, who have done that. And, you know, I don't know that many people, I didn't know this, that at Cheesecake Factories, they do all of their own sauces in-house. Like, I thought it was like a commissary kitchen where they would just batch it all out and then, you know, it would be sent out. But, you know, operationally speaking, we've got some really amazing, talented people that I've surrounded myself, been lucky to surround myself with. And they have really taken off with everything. So we'll create the recipes, we'll do our tastings with GP. She's very involved in what the final menu is like. It's a discussion, it's never a dictation, you know, and it's an ongoing story that we're still developing, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah. No, Max and I on the show have long lauded the praises of hiring from the corporate restaurant ranks, because they show up on time. They're, you know, and you can really kind of, and then you can just expand upon, take that like corporate training, but add the creativity piece to it. And it works out usually pretty well.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring up Cheesecake Factory, because, you know, I think Max and I always talk about it. It's like, how the fuck do you order for that place? Right. So in a place like you're working 19 kitchens, is there shared ordering, you know, as far as supplies and ingredients and stuff like that? Or how does that work?
Are you talking about in our colony?
Yes.
Kitchens?
Yeah.
No. So each kitchen is its own kitchen. So you're in charge of your own ordering, your own supplies and everything like that. So as we start to grow, I'm sure we'll start to develop more of those systems within our own company. But for now, no, it's just one
system. And it's just based like any restaurant in that case on like, okay, well, we usually do X amount of, you know, broccoli and X amount of chicken and blah, blah, blah. How much we'll need. One last question about that. So this packaging that Max was talking about sounds pretty innovative. Did you guys sit down with designers and developers and kind of create a proprietary thing, or did this stuff already exist?
No, well, a little bit of it existed. One of our founders was also a part of Mendocino Farms. Brilliant, brilliant guy. His name's Mario Del Perro. And he was, Mendocino Farms is kind of like a upscale, fast casual sandwich, soup, salads, things like that.
It's awesome. And it is a fantastic place to eat. Yeah.
And you know what's even better? We always tease him, like the service there. The people are so, so nice.
Yeah.
No matter which menu you go into, they're great. So it was a hybrid of, okay, well, you have takeout and you're someone coming in for lunch for business or for work or whatever, how do you want to eat? And obviously it's, you know, you're here in Santa Monica, you want to be very clean, you want to be able to have all your packaging in one go. So we kind of created this proprietary blend, if you will, and build out and design of all of our, you know, so it's a cup that goes into the pack, into the lid. And then we put a sticker over there so that you know what you're getting. And then on the bottom is your bowl or your salad or what have you. So you can take out your dressing, and if you're a dipper and you want to dip your salad into your dressing, you can. If you want to be a shaker, you can actually dump the whole dressing in there, close the lid and shake the whole dressing up so you can, or the whole salad, so you can mix it all. So we wanted to get
a shaker.
Yeah, yeah. Most people, I think, aren't, but I've seen a good variety of them around here.
My mom's a dipper.
I'm a shaker. I like to shake. Yeah.
Some people only like a little bit of vinaigrette, lightly dressed, and some like it all. So, you know, to each their own. But it was something that we are developing, and we have, like, tried to set out a patent for, and we want to create very thoughtful packaging because it is a brand where, you know, it is fancy and it is fun, but we also want to be approachable. So we wanted to make food and Goop Kitchen, both, all of that in one package, if you will.
Yeah. Those are the kind of things that I love to hear, because out of obviously the terrible thing that is the pandemic and COVID-19, is there has been some great innovation and, you know, a chance to look at things from a different lens. And I think takeout packaging, yeah, that makes so much sense. And it's now probably a whole new huge industry.
Right.
It didn't exist on the same level before.
Right. Yeah.
Kim, I really appreciate you giving us this this insight both into your new business and how you've kind of gone through, both from back and forth to California. You were in Spain, all this stuff. I mean, North Carolina, you're all over. I love to see that you're leading this charge on a new way of cooking and design. GP, she's got a good person on her team, which is cool. It's industry people from California. That's what we call her. It's no big deal. Before we get out of here, we'll have to figure out how to freeze dry and send you some Proof Alcohol Ice Cream, which is a fantastic sponsor of ours. They think differently about dessert, and that's because they add 7% alcohol in every pint container of ice cream. And so you can have your booze and eat it too, if you will.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, they have flavors like coconut rum, the bourbon caramel, strawberry moonshine, and they'll do seasonal flavors as well. Coming out of Columbia, South Carolina, so close to North Carolina, we let them cheat a little bit and come over
across the border.
Yeah.
Although, speaking of cheating, they will have to come up with a plant-based ice cream.
Yeah. There's a couple of really cool plant-based ice cream shops in Santa Monica in LA, because my brother-in-law, who is vegan, was telling me all about it. My eyes glazed over. I was like, all right, everybody. Did we run out of cows? Are they gone now? He's like, oh, no, but I'm like, okay, oh.
Take it easy, bud.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, vegan donuts, by the way, I have nothing wrong. The vegan donuts are just as good as any donut I've ever had. And I'm curious to try the plant-based ice creams as well. But we'll have to coordinate and get you some there. Go to proofalcoholicecream.com for more information, or check the link in our show notes. Because we're towards the end here, let's also give a good shout out to Triangle Wine Company. It was a 5 locations of Triangle Wine Company. Go to trianglewineco.com. You can use the NCFB promo code to get a nice little discount at checkout, whether you're doing it online or in person. Remember, they deliver. They do takeout boxes as well. Or you can just come on inside. Because in North Carolina, we drop the masks. We're out there running around showing our faces and our pretty teeth. And so you can go into a bar, you can sit down at a bar and drink a glass of wine or a beer at a Triangle Wine Company. So make sure you enjoy something from there. Matt, what else you got?
Kim, thank you so much. It was really great to spend some time with you, get to know you and hear about what you're doing. So hopefully you will come back to North Carolina with a Goop Kitchen at some point in the future. But until then, for all of you out there, go to Goop Kitchen if you find yourself in California, and you will eat and drink very merrily.
Thank you, guys, for having me.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.